Welcome to DevelopLex, a Middle Tech production hosted by me, Weston Lockhart, Ross Bogus, and Evan Knowles. This series will focus on the ins and outs of real estate development and investing, where we'll have the opportunity to sit down with developers of our cities, veterans of the industry, and key people that have over time made a massive impact on communities and neighborhoods. The purpose of this series is to be able to bring a knowledge base to our audience beyond that of what reading a book or watching a how-to video ever could, and educate from those who have done it by hearing their stories, both good and bad, along the way. We feel that historically the learnings of real estate have been inaccessible without being connected, and we would love to open the doors to the next generation of doers, as well as shine a light on how visions of community have been brought to life. We hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Bank of the Bluegrass. It's easy to preach about being a community bank without actually operating that way, but I can attest as a real customer of Bank of the Bluegrass that they are truly in the community and for the community. Whether it's closing a real estate transaction that needs some creativity, troubleshooting an issue where you need a real person on the other end of the phone, or just the simple fact that when you walk in the door, your banker knows your name, Bank of the Bluegrass has you covered. Plain and simple, the best bank in town. Bank of the Bluegrass, member FDIC. NMLS 421548, equal housing lender. DevelopLex is sponsored by SV & Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate.
Craftsman Contractors is Central Kentucky's one-stop shop for roofing, windows, siding, and gutters. CraftsmanContractors.com/contact us will get you straight to the form you need so that their team will get in touch about your project. Or just text Steven at 859-246-0108. When they finish your project of windows, siding, gutters, or roofing, you'll see what they mean when they say we build with integrity.
Welcome back to DevelopLex. Today you have Weston and Ross in the Awesome Inc. studio, and we have in front of us Tao Green.
Hello.
And a lot of ice cream.
Too. And a lot of ice
cream. All the ice cream.
All I'm saying is if you're listening to it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you've got to go check out the YouTube channel. We have a spread in front of us, and you're also going to be able to see a little bit more of the expressions we share as we go through the studio time together today.
Tao is a local small business entrepreneur, and I can let her get into that, but she owns a small business that you would be very familiar with, and we kind of wanted to talk about her journey in Lexington as an entrepreneur, obviously everything business and real estate related, and everything in between. So Tao, welcome on.
Thank you for having me. So excited to be on the show. And I love, of course, ice cream and small business. And of course, Ross has been a part of our Crank and Boom journey for many, many years. So thank you for having me.
Well, we are excited for you to share a little bit about the story of Crank and Boom, all the way to the point where I think most people will find out where you are. Like, I know a lot of folks I went to high school with, their first dates were at Crank and Boom.
Isn't that crazy?
So I'd love to hear a little bit about the story of it and how it got started.
Yeah. So I grew up in Frankfurt. I was the first one born in my family in the States. My family's from Thailand, and grew up in Frankfurt and worked in the family restaurant. So I have actually been in the food industry world since I was 7 years old, and I poured water for our restaurant and worked into other jobs, cooking and checking people out front. And after 10 years of working in the restaurant for most of my childhood, I left Kentucky swearing that I would never come back to Kentucky and that I would never work in food ever again. So funny how that works, because, you know, here we are in food in Kentucky. But I went to school in North Carolina, was planning to be pre-med and a doctor like my sister, and found that I really didn't like science when it got hard. So I just pretty much failed at everything once I got there, and it was really hard, and I was very far away from home. 9/11 happened around the same time, so it literally felt like the world was falling apart. And I fell into a journalism degree because I literally went through all the majors and looked at what majors can I do and still graduate in 2 years at that point. And I had thought about business school, and I actually failed all my classes to even get in the prereqs to even apply for business school, which is funny now. So accounting, statistics, I failed all those classes. So I didn't even have the opportunity to apply to business school because I didn't have the grades needed. So I looked at art, I looked at public policy, I fell into journalism, which ended up being fantastic because I learned good writing skills. And also it taught me to a bunch of other skills that I actually use now. So everyone had to take graphic design. It was the School of Journalism and Mass Communication. So everyone was required to take graphic design. Everyone was required to learn how to build a website. So I actually learned how to code by hand, which sounds crazy and ridiculous now that you have things like WordPress and all these other things that you don't have to code by hand. But learning those skills and PR, public relations, which ended up being my major, was fantastic. So I did that. I was cooking for my friends, and I really, even though I swore I'd never get another food job, I was cooking for my friends and found that it was a really great way to make friends, was to cook and invite them over. And I just love serving people. And I guess that part of me from the restaurant days, as well as, you know, growing up in the South and then being Thai, which Thai people are just oodles and ooze, you know, they ooze hospitality. So if you go to Thailand, it's basically a country full of very, very nice people. And I missed that interaction. And so I thought, you know, when I was finishing up my degree that, you know, maybe it would be fun to have a restaurant someday, which my parents thought was hilarious because I had, you know, left the state kicking and screaming. And here I was circling back to everything that I was trying to run away from, and came back, got a job, eventually landed back in Lexington and asked my parents to come out of early retirement to open our restaurant, Thai Orchid Cafe, which was where was that? And it was next to, so I think there is a sumo sushi place there now, but it was next to KS Bar. Mm-hmm. So at the time, it was next to Jalapenos. At the time, it was a cowboy bar where KS Bar was. And yeah, we had that restaurant for 9 years, but that's basically where the ice cream started, was after 5 years of operating the restaurant. My husband and I purchased the restaurant from my parents and decided, well, we should have something fun for dessert because we don't really have a dessert menu. And I just started toying around with making coconut ice cream, which I thought would be a perfect ending to someone's Thai meal. And I ordered a $60 Cuisinart ice cream machine off of Amazon and found a random Thai coconut ice cream recipe online, and then watched some YouTube videos on how to actually use the machine. So if there was no internet, there would be no Crank and Boom, because that's how it all started, me teaching myself from the internet. And started making coconut ice cream, and it went off really well. You know, we'd make a small batch, one tiny little batch, which was 4 or 5 servings a day, and got real excited when we'd sell out, and we would sell all of those. We were making just one batch a day, and started to fool around with other flavors. Our second flavor, if you want to ever know some Crank and Boom trivia, is the second flavor we ever made was sweet potato pie, because we had literally a mountain of sweet potatoes given to us from Elmwood Stock Farm out in Georgetown. They said, please take sweet potatoes. So I took them back to the restaurant. I roasted them off, put them in the ice cream, made some candy pecans and some like graham topping, pulled it together and said, we've got sweet potato ice cream. And it was just fun. You know, when you're a line cook working 16, 18 hours a day, making the same stuff over and over again, it was a nice outlet to be able to play with something like ice cream. So then it evolved other flavors and started doing things like coffee stout. I was like, oh, well, our friends own a brewery. Why don't we take some of their beer and put it in with our coffee ice cream and see what that tastes like. So yeah, right here we have a coffee toffee chip, which is the same coffee recipe that we use for coffee stout. So fooled around with different flavors, and people started coming into the restaurant and ordering ice cream and not ordering any Thai food. And that was the first hint that, you know, maybe there's something about this ice cream. Because at that point, we probably had a rotation of four or five flavors that we were making. And I found, you know, at the time, there was only Facebook. And so I would do a Facebook post about, here's the specials we have for our Thai food. And be like, yay. And then I would post something about, like, well, but this is the ice cream flavor of the day. And there would just be, I mean, so much interaction and engagement and people, you know, like, comment. We just love the ice cream. And it was very stark, the difference of how excited people were about whatever ice cream we were making versus, you know, that we were making a veggie delight with local greens. It just wasn't quite as exciting as the ice cream. And so, yeah, that's how it kind of started. And we've just kind of grown from there.
And it's such a great example of community development through internet, through just meaningful interactions. Like, you going into Thai Orchid, it was just you felt the family stuff. I love the tofu fries.
Yeah.
But
I miss tofu fries.
But it's a cool evolution of a story of a concept all the way up through, like, very intentional development through bricks and mortar, but not as the purpose of bricks and mortar. It just had to happen the way that it did.
Right. Yeah, I think what has been really cool and interesting about our story, so we're celebrating our 10th birthday this year as Crank and Boom, the ice cream brand. And every big step along the way, I would say, was customer driven. So, you know, we started making this ice cream in the back of our restaurant, and then when people started coming in, the real turning point was, it was January. This lady pulled up. It was blizzarding, like, sideways, you know, where it's all white. And, you know, we open because we're open. Nobody is in the restaurant. And a lady pulls up, you know, at the front of the restaurant. And we see her in a kind of Eskimo parka, you know, coming into the restaurant with this blizzard. And I was just sitting at the counter because I had nothing else to do, and watched this lady come in through the blizzard. And she said, and I said, what can I get for you? She said, well, I'm just here for the ice cream. And she said, you don't want any food? You came all the way here. I was like, nope, I'm just here for, you know, a couple containers of ice cream. And I remember looking at Mike, and Mike is my husband, looking at him and saying, this is, like, crazy. Like, what is it about this ice cream that is, you know, bringing people through a blizzard in the middle of January to come to our random little Thai restaurant to get this ice cream? And so it really started off as, oh, this will be a cute little side hustle that we'll just do in the summertime. And we'll get a little cart and maybe pitch a tent, and we'll go to festivals and the farmers market and stuff. And I quickly found that it was really fun to just say yes to everything, because I knew the ice cream was good and I wanted to get it in front of as many people as possible. So then, instead of being a cute side hustle, it turned into, we are going to suffocate the community with this ice cream and just say yes to every single thing. So I applied to every event, every festival within a 40-mile radius. If someone said, hey, can you come to our 10 people birthday party for a 10-year-old? Yes, I will be there with, you know, bells and whistles on, and just said yes to absolutely everything. And this is on top of, you know, running our restaurant full time. So this was, I mean, our schedule was absolutely bananas. We were running the restaurant on a Friday. We'd close at 11 or 12. We would get up at 3 or 4 in the morning, go get set up for the farmer's market. You have to be set up by 7 and ready to sell. We'd sit there and do nothing for 3 hours because nobody wants ice cream except us at 9 in the morning. And, you know, do that event, close that down, go to a different event, and just do events all day. And, you know, our go-to was going to White Castle at 1 in the morning because it was the only thing that was open. And that was, like, our rotation for, like, weeks during those seasons. And, I mean, we had, you know, some of those festival seasons we did, it was at least 3-4 years, and we would just run that schedule. And it was just crazy. And I don't think I could do it. I definitely couldn't do it now, but back then when I was a little more sprite.
Walk us through, calibrate our timeline right now. So running the restaurant, having pop-ups, distillery district, are you thinking about bricks and mortar? Are you saying, hey, there's this place down the sketchy road that right. nobody's touched since the 90s, and there's a rock right. wall and a gravel, gravel
yeah,
parking
so,
lot?
Yeah, so what was interesting, and you know, I had said so many things were customer-driven. So we're going out to all these festivals, and you know, we show up with our big purple tent, and people will ask, oh, well, where's your shop? Because they think we're a franchise, which is a nice compliment because I didn't feel like we were very put together. But
incredible branding.
Maybe to other people, we look like we were put together. And they'd say, well, where are you from? And they're like, oh, we're from here. And we're just this little ice cream company in this Thai restaurant, but you can get it at Good Foods. And it would just kind of get lost with people. Like, oh, okay, well, I'll just look for you at the next festival. So eventually people would say, you know, like, where's your store? Like, we don't have a store. We got this Thai restaurant. And then it started to shift and the conversation became, can you please open a store? Hmm. And it just repeated over and we just kept hearing it over and over. Will you please open a store? We would love for you to have a store. And at the time, this is in 2014-ish, 15-ish, and I have a restaurant that I'm working full time. I don't really want to have another brick and mortar because it's a lot of work and it's a lot of investment and it's a lot of risk. And our plate is already very, very full. And so people kept asking, will you please open a store? And then I felt like, almost felt like I was obligated to create a space for all the fans. So all these people who had spent their time following us to different festivals, these huge lines. At one point, I thought I should start an Instagram account called the Crank and Boom Line because everywhere we went, there was like massive line. And people started associating our tent with those lines. And folks who would, other vendors would ask to be next to us because of our line so that they would get the same exposure while you're waiting in line. Why don't you take a look at some lemonade that you can also purchase? So it just kept feeling like we just need something for the fans. That would be really, really kind of fun. And then I think you all probably know Clay Angelucci. He stopped by our booth at the farmer's market, left his card, said, give this towel. I want to talk about getting a store. And again, at the time, I was like, I don't want a store. That sounds like a lot of work. And so I emailed him back and he sent me some spots and I'm like, oh, okay, that's fun. And I, you know, my husband and I are kind of nerdy real estate people. Like we just like looking at buildings for fun. We like looking at houses for fun, whether we're going to buy them or not. But it's just fun looking at places and buildings and stuff.
You're in the right place.
Yeah, I know. So also why I'm excited to be here to talk to you guys. But so he said, hey, I sent him the listings and he said, oh, that's my building. And he's talking about the current Manchester location in the distillery district. And I said, what do you mean it's your building? And so he had lived here for 20 some years. He at the time was working at UK. And he said, I've always driven by that area and always wondered why nobody did anything with it. Because here's a distillery next to downtown. Like, why has nobody done anything with this area? And he said, I just love that little building. It's a little standalone building. It's like, it's cute. There's nothing like it around. And it's so close to downtown. Like, what a cool little building. And so I was like, well, maybe we should go look at it. So we went to take a look at it. And it was actually at the same time where there was this event going on. So somebody, I don't remember who put it on, but they had created this event in the what would now be the ethereal patio, which was not a patio at the time. It was a gravel lot. And this event was, I was just amazed because I didn't know this was happening. We were just coming to like look at this building. And there was a trailer and a bluegrass band. And there was a fire dancer. And there was Fork in the Road, a little food truck, because he was about to open his restaurant right behind where he was set up. So he would, you know, so basically it was kind of envisioning what this area could be in a very, very, you know, stripped down form. And I would say 200 people were at this event where there's no parking, there's no lights, and there's this fire dancer, and there's a band, and all these people are just dancing and drinking and having like the best time. And I just thought that was just so cool. And I thought, here's this random place that I didn't even know where it was. And they created this magic from just, you know, bringing a dancer in, bringing a band, having some good food. And like, it didn't matter that there weren't signs or lights or even a parking lot. And so we had that experience at the same time at looking at our building. So I went into the building. It was in very bad, bad shape. I mean, there were holes in the floor that go from the top to the bottom. You could stand on the first floor and look up and see the second floor. So it was in rough shape. But I walked up the stairs and I remember having a moment that I just said, oh my God, this would be an amazing room for a dance party. And that's how the idea of having that become an event space came to be. But
it's now the vault room.
That's right. There's now the vault room event space where we host baby showers. What we're hosting a rehearsal dinner. We've had weddings up there. Lots of fun parties. And but I just, that was the vision that I had, even in this building that was, had not been touched for, you know, decades. And just thought, what a cool thing to be able to add to, you know, Mark's restaurant. I think at the time Ethereal was already going in. Johnny was putting in the break room. And then the guys at Barrel House Distilling were already there. They had been there, I think, for 7-8 years already. So they were kind of lone wolves in this whole area. And just thought, well, I think that would be kind of fun if we had a little, our ice cream shop here. It felt way cooler than just going into a random strip mall. And I just felt very strongly about trying to develop that space. So that's how that all came about.
Are you looking to start or scale your real estate portfolio in Central Kentucky? Check out Rapid Fire Investments. They find off-market, discounted real estate deals just for you, so you can save time and maximize profits. From single-family homes to multifamily apartments, no matter what your investment goals are, Rapid Fire can help you reach them. Sign up for their email list today and get notified when new properties become available. Just go to rapidfireinvestments.com. That's rapidfireinvestments.com.
So there's the, well, first let me touch on, I really loved you talking about forming community, and it's really neat to hear about that story and say like, yeah, this could be where we bring the community to. So let me touch on that. But then the second thing would be, so obviously you've had all these people, you know, tell you over and over, like, you need to make the jump. You need to make the jump. They're not the ones signing a lease. They're not the one.
no one is going to pay the lease when, you know. Yeah. When push comes to shove.
Yeah. So your rebuttal is probably, well, you're going to need to come get a lot of ice cream for us to. So with that, I mean, how did you kind of navigate that process, and how did you know in your business or just in being an entrepreneur, like, this is when we make the jump?
Well, I feel like, you know, if we're going to have a flagship place, it better be a damn cool flagship place. And I remember thinking, okay, we're putting a lot of money into fixing this building. Because it was a lot of money that was put into renovating it, getting it up to code, getting it to be a place that you could serve food. And we had a moment where we thought, okay, this could go really well or it could go very badly. Because people might show up, and then people, like, nobody might show up. Because, you know, at the time it was still kind of a dicey area. There was an artist that was in the Barrel House building, and he carried a pistol in his back pocket all the time. And it's like, oh, okay, what have we gotten ourselves into here? But I think I had faith that because we had built such a following in the pop-up space and around town, and this was, you know, probably 2 years after we launched, two years, and felt like, okay, well, people really want this. So hopefully there's enough people that want this that they will want to come hang out at this kind of random space that has no parking lot and no signs and no lights, and just kind of crossed our fingers. But, you know, usually when Mike and I make a large move, and I would say this was probably one of our biggest moves at the time, we always think about what's the worst case scenario. Like, if we lose everything, like if the whole thing fails and we have to lose everything, then what does that look like? And at the time we're like, well, You've got enough in your retirement that we could sell everything we have here and go to Thailand and live on the beach off of your retirement. And I was like, that's actually not terrible. Plan B.
Yeah.
And so that was literally the plan, was if everything, you know, goes down the toilet, that's what we'll do, and we'll be okay with that. But I've always been fairly, I haven't ever really been risk averse, and I always for me, the regret of not trying is way worse than trying and failing, even if it's failing hard or having something not work the way you want to. So I think over time, I've just become very comfortable with risk and wanting to just dive in because I think it's a cool idea. And I don't mind if it doesn't work out.
So let's transition from distillery district where there was all sort of environmental concerns, scary downtown, what is this place going to be kind of thing, all the way to there's this new, shiny, perfect development that's coming out at Man of War and Nicholasville Road.
Yeah.
And they tap you mm-hmm. and they say, hey, what's it look like for a second location?
Right.
Walk us through what that thought process was. One of the most cool things, Tao and I had some afternoon meetup at Good Foods Co-op, and you had a book and it had a sketch of what that was going to look like and how pull these components from Starbucks and this feel from there. And I was like, this is so cool. Is this what developers get to do?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this is my gig. I'm forget city planning.
Right.
What was that process like? What did you look at when you were looking at a new build, new car smell, everything?
Right. Well, and, you know, looking back on it, it was two completely different experiences because with Manchester, there's no plan. There's no developer. We're on our own. We're trying to just create what we want in our space without really thinking about what that means for the rest of the area. So, you know, one cool thing about the distillery district is, you know, in the beginning, not just all the business owners are local, but all the building owners are local. And so I think that's part of the magic in that we didn't have a big developer to say, well, your signs are going to be this color and you're going to be open these hours. It just kind of happened organically because all of us who had some investment in the area just wanted it to be a cool place for people to go. And over time, you know, now U-Haul owns that big building, but, you know, up until then, it had been that way where all the building owners were all local and all the business owners were all local. So we kind of had this unsaid collaboration where we didn't have meetings that said, this is what we're going to create in the distillery district. It was just everyone kind of doing their own thing, and it kind of magically worked together. So when, you know, the folks at the summit came and approached us, and it was probably in 2014. I mean, it was years before we actually, you know, broke ground. And I remember they brought me to, I think we sat in the Panera in Palomar, and they brought me this big fancy book of what the development was going to look like. They had already mapped out what demographic of people they were planning to have shop in this area. And they eventually they ended up pitching this idea of the barn, which would be our first like food hall, which to me is like a fancy word for a food court, mm-hmm. but it sounds a little more modern and trendy. But it would be this all local food hall, and it would be from local purveyors, and it would be in the middle of this vibrant outdoor walking mall. And it all just, it sounded very cool. And I thought, well, you know, that.
Did they bring fire dancers?
There were no fire dancers. So that should have been my first clue that maybe, you know, it would be a different vibe. But, you know, we talked over this amount of time. They brought in some developers out of Dallas who were tasked to create the vision of what the barn would be. That's what the food hall ended up being called. And, you know, people like Weena Michael and Dan Wu and Pasture and Athenian Grill, all these big hitters in our community were joining in. And it just felt like just a very cool thing to be a part of. And, you know, for us, it was going to be a very small space. And so the per square foot was high, but then you also were getting the benefit of having the communal eating space. We basically wouldn't have to pay for the upfit of the dining room. So we just, you know, we took care of our space. And so there were a lot of attractive things about it. And just thinking about the synergy of being with all these other local purveyors, like that just sounds really fun to have like cool, fun neighbors that we can create this kind of funky, interesting space together. But that's how it all developed. So it was a very many years process. before we actually opened in 2017.
Very cool. Very cool. Now that's a cool peek behind the curtain of the first generation of what that development came out to be. There's a lot of thought process that goes into all these big time developments before even one Bobcat's on the ground.
Sure. Yeah. So where are we at? 2017 now?
We're at 27. So in September of 2017, the barn opens. The Summit itself, the rest of the development had been open since the spring of 2017. And then our project, like every single project I've been involved in, was delayed. So we didn't open until September. And literally, I think it was September the 7th, we opened the barn for the grand opening. September the 14th, I had our first kid. So whole process, we birthed the store and then we birthed a human at the same time. So
that was probably really easy.
Yeah, super easy. But we have lots of pictures of me in a hard hat on the construction site, you know, very pregnant, trying to, you know, get our project done and built. But, you know, you try to do all the things, and just because you're growing a human shouldn't stop you from going on a construction site.
Yeah.
But it was.
So through that experience though, the business is continuing to evolve. Manchester still is continuing to have more and more notoriety. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about kind of the evolution of Crank and Boom and to what it is today, and then any other concepts that you've worked on.
Yeah. So when we opened Manchester, our lease at Thai Orchid was just about to come out. And this was another big 2015 was full of big decisions and big moments for us. And, you know, we had been running this restaurant for 9 years. It was successful. It was doing fine. But we knew that if we wanted to go all in this whole ice cream thing, like, we needed to put our full attention into it. And, you know, being in the restaurant, it's very repetitive. For me, I'm just a creative person. So I like new stuff. I like jumping into new things. And so it was just time for us to let go of that. And it was really scary because at the time, you know, I think 10 to 20% of our family income for my husband and I was in the Thai restaurant. Wait, let me do that again. For the Thai restaurant was like 80 to 90% of our income. And then the very small chunk, 10, 20% was ice cream. And so to say goodbye to the majority of our income and say, we're just going to basically put all our chips in and say, this is what we're going to do full time now is a little scary too, but I was like, it's going to be okay. We'll figure it out. So we did. And we said goodbye to the restaurant and our Thai food business, and then just went all in to ice cream. And, you know, eventually opened our second location at the Summit. And, you know, and then COVID happened and the developers closed the barn. So we thought, well, we can either just close or we can look for a different spot to move into. So we're lucky to find the spot where we're at now over on Clay's Mill, which is in Stonewall Shopping Center, right next to our best friends, the North Lime Donuts. And we love the Domino's and the Chinese restaurant that's next door too. And it felt right because it was kind of close enough to where the barn was. But it also felt like it'd be cool to be a neighborhood ice cream shop to where people from the neighborhood could walk to. It's at a very high visibility intersection over there in Wellington and Clay's Mill. And I said, I need the biggest sign you can make me on this building so that at nighttime when I'm driving down Wellington, I can see the giant pink Crank and Boom, which you can, which that was my goal. So if you're driving from the mall on Wellington towards our spot, you can see the giant Crank and Boom, pink Crank and Boom sign lit up at night. And that's what I was hoping for.
That's awesome. I would say with that, you just touched again. I feel like you really appreciate synergy in your business. Has that been kind of a recurrent, like, are you outwardly thinking that with your husband as you guys process like new locations, and like, is that a conscious thought of yours, is like, we need synergy. We need the Northline people next to us. We need the barn people next to us. You
know? Yeah, absolutely. I think so much of your success, if you're trying to pick out a location, is that synergy. because you want to, you don't necessarily want to be in an island, even though Manchester felt like an island when we first started. But the vision was that it would not be that way forever. But yeah, anytime we, and we have looked at so many different places for so many different paths along our journey in all sorts of neighborhoods around town. And it always, sometimes it's like a gut feeling. You're like, kind of look at that. I was like, there's no parking here. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with this place that's next to it. And it just doesn't quite feel right. But yeah, I would say 100% synergy is at the very top of the list as to like why we go into one place versus another.
So let's transition to kind of forward facing questions. So obviously you're a business in Lexington, and you've touched on this a significant amount, but if you want to continue in any capacity relating to the city of Lexington, how do you feel like the city and the people that live here have supported you? Has there been anything that like sticks out to you here versus, you know, you could scale and move to Nashville? Like that could be another route for you, but why Lexington?
I mean, it's home for one. I think I'm in a place in my life where, you know, we've built the business here. It was, for me, I like being here because it is where my family, it's where I grew up. It's where it feels like home. I lived in North Carolina for 4 years, had the most amazing time in school, had all sorts of awesome friends. I still, you know, love North Carolina, but it just never felt like home. Basketball was part of that too. So coming home to it feeling like home, it made sense. I mean, it made the most sense to start things here, but it always has felt like, well, we want to grow within the city because this is our people. The people understand us. They have supported us through the years. They're the ones who have shown up all this time. I mean, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the hundreds and thousands of people who have walked through our doors. And so, you know, when we opened Manchester, one of the many thoughts I had about the place and thinking, like, I really want this to become a community center. Because ultimately, I'm a philanthropist at heart. I just do the business to basically fund my philanthropy. So until I'm a gojillionaire, I will continue doing the business until I can self-fund my philanthropy. But I always wanted it to be a community center. And even, you know, our Clay's Mill spot, I feel like its own community center. We have chess scrimmages and people have their birthday gatherings and people come after school and it just feels like a really, really cool place. And I think Lexington's very unique in how much they love supporting the local folks. And I think people will go to a business because they want to support local and because they know the people behind those businesses, that there's a family that's working behind there and that, you know, there's people that they want to support and something they want to be a part of. And I think that's what we've worked really hard to build is what's something that people want to feel like, yeah, I want to go be a part of that. Because people can get ice cream anywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's such a commodity in that you can really go anywhere. So why would people come see us versus something else? And I think that's what we've worked really hard to do is to be different and to be more than just an ice cream shop. Like we are here as an engine for good. And I tell our team, I was like, I don't know how long we will be together, whether you're in this company for 2 days or 200 years, but I hope that our time together is mutually beneficial and that by the time you leave here, that you will be a better human than when you started. So I don't know if that's through training, through experience, through meeting other people that are nice and kind. And so I'm hoping that we're building this army of kind people that will go out into the world. But I feel like Lexington is a prime place for that because there's so many nice people here. And I feel like people are genuine too. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people genuinely appreciate what we're doing and have been so great in supporting us all these years.
Wow. What a statement on Lexington. I will say let Ross, you talk about it a little bit.
So the Crank and Boom podcast is coming out soon. Next week?
Next week, March 28th on Tuesday.
And if you've enjoyed our conversation today, you are going to love just the authenticity that you're going to hear about all of the stories, lessons, heartaches, and how to get past it. It is a really cool podcast. So go ahead. It's already on Apple Podcast, Crank and Boom Podcast with Tal Green. You're going to see the the purple iconic logo and her smile. Give it a follow on Instagram, and you're going to be able to hear a little bit more about Lexington community development, business development, personal development, and everything there.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm so excited because I follow a lot of different podcasts, including Develop Lex, and have just thought that it was a really perfect platform for all these stories that live in my head to go. Because we've had, I've been an entrepreneur for 20 years, almost 20 years, and we've had Crank and Boom for 10 of those years. And entrepreneurship is a very lonely road. And I think a lot of times the only people that understand what you're going through are other entrepreneurs. And I had wished during my journey, and I've been blessed with many mentors and, of course, my parents and other people that have helped me along the way. But I would have loved to have a resource that was talking about small business. There's a lot of business podcasts about how you can build your gajillion-dollar company. And sometimes that feels really overwhelming. Like, oh, my God, I'm just getting started. How do I even get to there? But I think it's cool to be able to speak from a perspective as a small business and saying, well, we've been able to scale in our small way. But how do you do that? How do you hire your first employee? What does that look like? How do you even know when to start if you've got this idea that keeps gnawing at you? And, just a bunch of lessons and stories I've learned along the way that I hope can bring solace and companionship to people who are also going through the same journey. And basically me telling you, it's okay if you cry every day in the closet because it's hard, because I've certainly been there as well, and just want to be your small biz BFF and just encourage you and tell you that it's all going to be okay and that you can do it because you can, even if it's hard.
That's awesome. Well, Tao, thank you for sharing this story. Thank you for developing Lexington to be a more caring, loving city that we have. And we appreciate you joining us today on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.